Welcome to What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University's School of Medicine. This is your invitation to meet the faculty dedicated to understanding our most complex organ, committed to curing mental illness, and inspired to help create a healthier, thriving world. Happy to have you join us on another What Makes Up Your Mind mini-pod in our CNIX mini-series. I'm Jane McMillan. As you've been hearing in this series, CNIX stands for the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience for high schoolers. 2-week immersive summer programs of learning about mental well-being and cutting-edge mental health research and treatments from Stanford Psychiatry's world-class faculty and clinicians. This is rare access to some of the best minds in brain-mind science, like Dr. Jamie Zeitzer, Stanford Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences in the Division of Sleep Medicine. Dr. Zeitzer studies what makes you tick, or rather, how you're made to tick. His research is on our circadian rhythms, controlled by our bodily biological clocks and the master clock in our brains, ticking away. Light and darkness, the rotation of the earth, we, like most living things, are in this intimate cycle, which regulates not just sleeping and waking, but our immune system, hormones, body temperature, and our cognitive abilities. And how we treat our bodies, daily routines, when we eat meals, stress, even socializing, can have an impact on this very complex system. This is the fascinating world Dr. Jamie Zeitzer brings to CNIX participants. Students get in on his surprising discoveries. They learn about the many remaining mysteries, too, that he continues to investigate. And they come away with mind-body self-awareness that will stay with them for a lifetime. Dr. Zeitzer explains it best himself. So let me bring in CNIX program manager, Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, as we meet Dr. Jamie Zeitzer.
Jamie, thank you for joining us today to talk about CNIX and your role in the program. You're one of our veteran presenters that we love to have come speak about circadian rhythms. Tell us a little bit about your area of study and research and why you think it's so cool that you'd like to come share it with our participants in the program every summer.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for chatting. And I got to tell you, I love the program. I love getting students interested, in addition to teaching in this program with the high school students. I also have, high school students coming through my lab. I chat with high school students, routinely, remotely, and help them with their projects related to sleep. So, I do a lot of work on sleep and circadian rhythms, and I think it's one of these things that, sadly, I've realized after 25 years of studying it that no one actually cares about it, but they do care about what it enables. So a lot of people, if they could just like press a button and be asleep, that they would totally do that. If they could get an hour of sleep and feel good and refreshed, they would do that as well. So, people care about kind of what sleep is enabling. They care that, they feel happier when they wake up. They feel that, that they're more able to tackle the day, that their immune system works better, that, their brain works better. And trying to figure out how we can do that, that's something that I'm super interested in. Like, how do you get people to actually have, healthier brains through sleep? And I have to say, it's one of these things that in speaking with teenagers, they're going through it because typically as they're getting older, they're getting later and later and school's still starting pretty early for them. So they often aren't getting enough sleep. So they know exactly what happens when they don't get enough sleep. And, that's ranging from everything from the brain's not working as well to being crankier, to being less good on the athletic pitch. So lots of stuff, I think, kind of draws them into the area.
Can you tell us about what your current studies look like? What kind of research do you do in your lab?
Sure. So we do lots of stuff. And I have to say, if you asked me in 3 months the same question, I'd have a totally different answer. We've got some longstanding studies that are going on. So one study is actually in teens. We're trying to see if we can get them to go to sleep earlier. So we are intentionally manipulating their circadian system. So basically their brain is in Denver while they're living in the Bay Area. And so when they get tired at 1 o'clock in the morning, it's only midnight local time. We've done this in the past over about a month and shown great results. We get them to get around 45 minutes of extra sleep per night. And so now what we're doing is we're taking a look at that over a full academic year and saying, okay, well, maybe they'll do it for a month, but will they really do it for months? Will they really do it for a full year? And will they kind of maintain the increased amount of sleep? But, you know, what are the downstream consequences? Are they feeling better in terms of depression, which is in this area a serious problem in a lot of our adolescents? Are they doing better academically? Are they better doing better with friendships? So looking at a lot of the things, again, that sleep is enabling. So that's one project. And another project that we're working on is looking at, and this is in slightly older group, this is in college-aged women, so women in generally in their early to mid-20s. And we're taking a look to see, well, how does the menstrual cycle interact with sleep and circadian rhythms to impact actually biomechanics. So basically looking at lower limb biomechanics, things like how your legs move. And we're trying to get at the question of basically how do these three things, sleep, circadian rhythms, and the menstrual cycle, how do they interact to increase physical performance and to put people at greater risk for injury at different points. And hopefully what we'll learn is basically when to suggest that people do things like when do they work out, when they shouldn't, when they should really focus on athletic activity without distraction, a variety of things along that line. And then we've got a lot of things that really kind of pull at my heartstrings because it's these are things that I just truly, from an intellectual perspective, enjoy, which is lots of collaborations with people on Alzheimer's disease, on pain, on bipolar disorder, on traumatic brain injury. So we've got a bunch of things. And in each of the cases, what we're really looking at is how can we use kind of changes in sleep or phenotyping sleep to better understand those conditions. With the idea is that can we give clinicians a tool to basically help them understand what's going on inside the brain and potentially then how to go after and fix what are often intractable problems.
You talked about the gender part of your studies, and I think that's really important, not just for the young women who are attending these courses, but for the young men to understand as well, that there are different complex systems within humans and gender plays a part in that. How do you bring these interesting studies and make it real for them in this limited time setting?
Yeah, so honestly, one of the ways I approach it is that I'm not trying to teach them the details about sleep or circadian rhythms. I'm not trying to make them experts in this area. I'm trying to create a story for them so that they understand why it's important and how it fits into their lives. And with a lot of people, not just, you know, teens, but a lot of people, if they don't care about it, you can teach all you want and they're not going to listen. But this is something that if I can show why they should care about it, I think that kind of engenders their learning experience or to increase their learning experience. So when I talk to them, I don't skimp on any details. I don't like that. I don't like when people kind of, you know, dumb things down for teens. They're quite smart. They might not have as much educational background, someone who's in college, but they are more than capable of understanding things. And so, again, just try to present it to them in a way that they're excited about learning about it. And I think when they do get excited, intellectually excited about it, then they do pay attention and hopefully they'll take things away about not only their own sleep, but about that and other people. And I have to say, at least in the U.S., there's a lot of cultural aspects to sleep. One of the common refrains is, you know, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Sleep is for the weak. This is slightly problematic. You know, this is, I think, something which people don't understand, that it's not just about feeling good when you wake up, but there's something else to it. And kind of understanding how that impacts your life is kind of important. And again, it doesn't mean that you're going to go and get 8 hours of sleep every single night and sleep with good sleep hygiene and at the right time. Doesn't mean that at all, but it just means that you understand that there's a trade-off and that sometimes you might decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to get a little extra sleep tonight.
I find it fascinating that you said nobody's really interested in this area because I think that you all end up having some pretty good conversations. What are some of the best questions or most memorable discussions that have come out of your presentations?
Yeah, so, you know, I love chatting with high school students, undergraduates. There's a certain degree of naivete there, which is great. They're not going in with all these assumptions about what is supposed to be. And they're just like, well, this sounds cool. How does it fit into, you know, my lived experience? And it's fascinating that over the several times that I've taught in this course, how the questions kind of shift. So, for example, several years ago, I was getting a bunch of questions about climate change. Like, how does climate change impact circadian rhythms? There were a couple of questions about a year or two ago, and it was all about equity. And there were a bunch of questions in the last year about race and gender identity. And it's fascinating because they're not coming at it with a political angle. They're not saying, well, you know, I want to use this as evidence for X, Y, and Z. They're really just curious, like, well, there's all this stuff going on in my life through my feeds and all these discussions about in the last year, it was about gender identity. How does this intersect with that? You know, how does this impact or how do these two things interact? And they're frankly fascinating questions. Since everyone has a circadian rhythm, everyone has sleep, it's something that they can bring their own personal experience to. And I think that really drives some of these questions. And sometimes they also have questions about family members, older family members who are ill, and there'll be some questions surrounding how this impacts it. And in fact, I was having a chat with one high school student who was asking, like, well, why isn't there more done about taking psychiatric medicine at the right time of day? I'm like,
wow.
It totally should be. You know, I encourage you to look at that because there really isn't enough being done about that. And, you know, we've known for a long time that it matters. I honestly look at it as a two-way street. It's not just me, you know, up there lecturing to them. You know, getting them to talk, I have to say that's the hardest thing to do. They have questions, but they're inhibited to ask. So trying to get them to do that is kind of always a challenge. But it's always fun when you see all of a sudden someone like, oh, yeah, I do have a legitimate question here.
I'm curious about if your discussions get into and how this gets students to react about circadian rhythms and our emotional well-being or our emotional self-control or our decision-making. Is that part of the discussion? Because I would think that would be really important, especially at that age where they're getting ready to make big decisions.
It is. It's something that we chat about. You know, it falls under the basic heading of everything's impacted by circadian rhythms. It's just a question of the magnitude. You know, they're going through their lives and they're trying, I think, especially, you know, ones who have a little more emotional insight, to try to figure out why all of a sudden are they feeling this way? Like, they were just fine 5 minutes ago and now all of a sudden they're not. You know, to understand how this might impact things and how it might be that, you know, if you're up, even if you're not sleep deprived and if you're up in the middle of the night, your brain works very differently, especially in terms of decision making and emotion regulation. And again, this is something that they experience. I mean, there are many teenagers who are up in the middle of the night, and there are many teenagers who are making really bad decisions in the middle of the night. And they are usually unaware that it's not just random, that there's a real biology behind this. And it does, I hope, give them pause for a moment at least to think, well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Should I really be sending out this tweet? Because again, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there's no way you're sending out that tweet. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, the brain's like, sure, go ahead, do it. Awesome idea. So we definitely kind of get into things on those lines.
I'm thinking, Jamie, about what you just shared in terms of sometimes, especially early in the program, it can be hard to get participants to speak up. And I'm wondering, what encouragement would you give to prospective participants out there that are thinking about applying for the program, but think maybe they don't know enough or they don't have enough to contribute to a conversation about something like circadian science or any of the other topics that we cover?
Yeah, so I think the program's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity to kind of see a different learning style, a different learning model. And really, it's an opportunity, for me at least, to see do you care about this stuff? You know, is this something that interests you, you know, at a gut level? I don't think you have to come in with a lot of foreknowledge. Basic knowledge of biology is great, and, you know, psychology helps some, but it's really, if you are an engaged learner, then it's a great opportunity. And it's not one that I definitely did not have that kind of opportunity growing up. To have that kind of exposure to all these awesome talks and great ideas, and to think like, okay, well, I might not be able to understand all of the details and mechanisms. I mean, you've got quite a breadth of material being, you know, presented to them that they get to chat about. So there's no way that anyone is going to understand or have a background in all of that. And so I really, you know, I would encourage them to not worry about, do they know enough? It's really a question of is, do you want to find out, is this something that is of interest to you? And, you know, I have to say, of all of the organ systems, the brain to me is by far the most complicated, and we know by far the least about how it works. One of the things that I think is appealing for people in the area is the degree of uncertainty in how things work. And if you're comfortable with that, then it's a great area to get involved in. And I think the program really kind of exposes them to, you know, everything from stuff that I do, which is, you know, I really don't focus on so much on the pathological end, but more on the physiologic end, to things that are more pathological, to things that are administrative, how medicine is done. So there's really quite a variety. And I think a lot of people going in also might not know that there's lots of other career paths around, in this case, you know, around psychiatry, where it's not just, there's one thing. You can go and you can get an MD and then become a psychiatrist. Well, you know, there's lots of other things that you can do.
You're absolutely right. We just need people that are willing to learn and be open to these ideas. And I know that you've had a different career trajectory than some of the other folks. Everyone that comes and presents in the program has kind of had their own path. So we love to have you all talk about that too, because as you said, students might not realize there's a million different ways to get to where they might want to end up. And so...
Oh, yeah. Well, and a lot of students these days, I have to say, they are a lot more focused than I was as a high school student. And, you know, they are much more on top of their game. But not everyone is, but it seems that way. It seems like everyone from the time that they were in kindergarten has a plan. But not everyone does. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to end up where you want to be. It doesn't mean that there aren't alternate pathways. It doesn't mean that there aren't ways that you can be happy and intellectually engaged in a career that maybe wasn't the one you thought of at first.
You presented such a safe, encouraging invitation to students not to be afraid of what they don't know, but to be excited about what they might find out. I think that's perfect. Dr. Jamie Zeitzer, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Jamie Zeitzer, Stanford Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, Division of Sleep Medicine, focusing on circadian rhythm research. Learn more about his work through his link in our program notes. Dr. Zeitzer is one of the many neuroscience doctors and researchers engaging participants in the CNIX program. So please take a listen to the other mini-pods in our series and meet some of the other presenters. And get a deep dive on the clinical neuroscience immersion experience itself by listening to our full What Makes Up Your Mind podcast with program manager Dr. Laura Turner-Essel. A link for the application process, financial assistance information, and current year program dates and presenters are also right there in our program notes. Thanks for joining us on What Makes Up Your Mind. With Dr. Turner-Essel, I'm Jane McMillan. You've been listening to What Makes Up Your Mind. Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the experts in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine. For more information on this program and all of our transformational work, visit us at med.stanford.edu/psychiatry. What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health is a production of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine, a copyright of the Board of Trustees of Stanford University.